Good morning, everybody. I'm your host, Hal, and this is another episode of Vietnam Innovators. Thank you for tuning in every single week and supporting the show. We really appreciate it. Today's guest is Gung Dang. Gung has been a friend of mine for many years. He arrived just after I did, although he was born in Vietnam. That's a big, big difference. He spent some time in the US, built a successful software company, came back to Vietnam, and has done a few things. Today, we're going to focus on his current venture, Forbes, which made a big splash coming back into the market after a couple of years. But we'll let Gung kind of share more about that himself. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's great to have you. You know, I remember when we first met back in 2017, I was really curious about why you came back, what your motivations were. You looked like you had a successful career in the US and, you know, you suddenly left and you came back to the country of your birth, right? And that's a recurring theme that I'm seeing, I'm sure you're seeing as well. And, you know, today's podcast, we'll have you share a little bit about that. But before we talk about, you know, Forbes and what you're doing now in your current role as CEO, let's talk about what you did before.
Great.
So Gung, maybe you can start with a little bit about yourself and what you did before Vietnam and what drove you to come back.
I've always been an entrepreneur all my life. It's just my family, everybody's doing different things. So I've always wanted to build something, but I don't know what it is. It's just knowing from a family saying, okay, well, I'm trying to be an entrepreneur. And then I love the chaos and the unknowns of starting something and putting everything together and seeing it grow and making it happen.
Yeah.
Just general business and marketing, international marketing. I went to school in London for a bit and then graduated back in the States. Went to work for some businesses in the financial sector and then switched into software. And then from then I taught myself software development. So I've done that for many years. I'm in product development, focusing on user experience between the business team, the engineering team. Understanding what the real world application of what we're building is. And that's what my strength is.
Okay.
Has been for 15 plus years. And I built my own business, published a book, spoke at conferences at Microsoft in Europe and in the US. And built enough of a bit of a community, and then I started my own business. Then I was lucky to get into a space that has a bit of a niche, but it's good to win in a certain space. It's in auditing, we work and sell to auditing firms like KPMG, EY, and Grant Thornton, and so forth. It's in two sectors. One is banking and financial industry, anti-money money laundering, and FBI blacklist. So we built application to identify the outliers in the transactions, big data. And the other sector is healthcare space, but healthcare is also very, very big, very broad. So we focus on just in the ER. So in the ER, when a patient get admitted, there's a lot of chaos, there's a lot of encounters that are happening. So the nurse comes in or technicians comes in, they leave the room, they come back. The doctors comes in and they leave the room, they come back. There's a lot of chaos, so it needs to be properly documented and go back and see what happened to that certain case. And over the course of time, there's a huge, massive amount of data in that room that we need to be in compliance with the government. And we built application to identify those.
And how long did you do this business for?
Sounds
like
years,
you have a generation of knowledge and expertise about it.
It's about 8 years.
Okay.
Yeah. We're not an expert in that space. We are engineering experts, but we don't have domain expertise. So that's when we partnered with a company called Coral Horwath in the States. And we built that and we sold to others as well.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So you went from building software and products for mostly B2B customers, people doing
it's very
big
dry.
Data. You can call it dry, but it's very impactful stuff, right? It's the stuff that people don't see, but helps, you know, healthcare workers do their job better and people to fight fraud and whatever else they're doing. So not as sexy, but it's in the back. Quite the change now, I would say, at least from my perspective. Forbes Vietnam, it's both a B2B in a lot of ways, but also more importantly, a B2C company, right? You guys have to create content and media that appeals to your target audience and in return, build a community and audience around that as well to monetize. What drove you to go from building software applications to what you do now in media?
I think it's maybe similar answer with a lot of people. What drove me to that was just by chance, and COVID was the
And coming to
chance.
Vietnam too,
So
that was a factor.
coming to Vietnam was when I exited that company, and then I was the software company in the States, and I was trying to figure out what's next. So I was thinking about going back to LA and what family is, and maybe San Jose, and trying to figure out a different venture. Traveling and going back to Vietnam, by that time, a few of my cousins are moving here. And so exploring different opportunities. I signed a deal with Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Enterprise is the world's largest car rental company, still privately held. And in Vietnam, it's not very well known, but in Europe and in America, it's a perfect case study for an executive MBA program. Anybody go to an MBA program, they learn about Enterprise family and their management. So I signed a deal with them for Southeast Asia, and COVID hit, and everything just kind of stopped. I remember March 17 of 2020 when the Vietnamese government shut down the borders, and then we opened it 2 years later. So I wouldn't be sitting around and waiting for it. And by chance, a business partner of mine at the moment introduced me to Forbes, and thought it was this interesting case. And well, I'm in media. I'm very excited and interested. Digital products, software products, that's what my domain expertise is. I ponder a little bit, but I thought, moving here by chance and get stuck, and also trying to figure out what's next. Throughout COVID, I wouldn't want to go anywhere but here. Forbes brings a lot of opportunities. I think seeing the significant growth of Vietnam and the economy and the young generation, how dynamic it is. People like me or you are coming back to Vietnam, and more of those people are coming back. Our parents left the country for economic opportunities in the US or in Europe, but today economic opportunities in solely in Southeast Asia, the world's fastest growing economic region. And Vietnam is among the rising star. Taking over Forbes is a wonderful opportunity to tell that story, to celebrate the young, dynamic labor force in this country, the ones who are contributing significantly to the growth of this country.
Yeah,
And
it's like a mini MBA for you, probably.
yes.
Well, every time you meet somebody new, Forbes is touching many industries, not just media, of course, but we're talking like manufacturing, investment, food and beverage, FMCG, just all over the place. What are some stories of people that you've met through Forbes that you felt like, wow, I would have never met these people if I never came back to Vietnam, let alone done Forbes? Maybe just a couple on top of your head that can kind of inspire some of our listeners today to pick up a Forbes magazine.
It's a tricky question.
Quite a few.
Leaving
You don't have
people
to pick
names
specific people, but
out.
just industries in general and stories that you've come across over the couple of years.
There are many industries. Vietnam is very much an industrial manufacturing economy. We thrive through manufacturing of products that export outside of Vietnam. Some are consumed here. Vietnam has about 7 billionaires. Met quite a few of them through Forbes. Impressive people, didn't grow up in a very fortunate situation like us, didn't have Western education, modern management practices. They lived through the war, technically. They grew up with that, and they were able to build an empire to contribute significantly to the economy. And what I've learned through that is we can learn the best things from Harvard, MBA, whatever, Oxford. We bring it back to Vietnam, but I think what's the domestic knowledge and experience and insights that combine with what we learn from a more developed society is the key to it. And those people, the billionaires in Vietnam whom I met, and they know how to leverage that. So, go back to your question. One person that stood out, like I wouldn't imagine I would meet these people, was able to meet a lot of diplomats. And then the Forbes Women's Summit that we run is having the attendance of Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern. She's one of the greatest women leaders at our time at the moment, and embracing and encouraging and promoting women leadership and equality.
So in the
So
span of 2 years, you went from meeting, who's who've or like you weren't in media yet. You're meeting your colleagues and friends in Vietnam, obviously, to meeting prime ministers the next time,
Yes.
next 2 years. So it's quite the change. Let's talk about the main content leadership pillars driving Forbes today. As an American myself, when I read Forbes, I think about potentially innovation, diversity, business leadership. I think their content, is quite wide-ranging. In Vietnam, though, what do you guys focus on that drives the content and voice of Forbes Vietnam?
The media landscape in Vietnam is quite tricky. In the U.S., was known as celebrating wealth and free capital market. Always, when I was reading Forbes back in the States, was about Warren Buffett, Jack Welch, Elon Musk, and Bill Gates, and so forth. So the billionaire list—that's what they're really good at, and really strong, and sharing leadership lessons. But Forbes became kind of declining brand, it's become old, and then kind of lost touch with the younger generation. So 10 years ago, they did a brand. They started with an idea called Forbes 30 Under 30, because the rise of the tech startup and became, they took over Silicon Valley and became the billionaires of the world. Under 30, so that's a young crowd. So Forbes had an idea of celebrating that crowd by starting a brand called Forbes Under 30. Now, around the world, when we talk about Forbes brand, there's only two that are resonating with a lot of people, among others. One is the billionaire list, the other one is Forbes Under 30, because that's touching the young generation. When we bring that to Vietnam, it's very challenging, because Vietnam market, we cannot compare with the US. It's two extreme opposite. We're small, we're a growing economy, and we don't have that many billionaires. There's seven in the country, although probably more. We've yet to work with them. Forbes ranked seven of them in various sectors. But to only focus on these, we wouldn't have enough materials and stories to share with the audience, the readers here. Second, Forbes Under 30. So the US has 350 million people plus, and such an advanced economy, big, big market. To find 30 individuals, outstanding individuals, easy to find the billionaires under 30 years old. In Vietnam, extremely, extremely rare.
There are no billionaires yet,
It's
not to our
hard to
knowledge.
do so.
But they're
So
coming.
they're coming.
If you guys can find them first, faster than anyone, I'm sure they're out there. Or
Yes.
potential billionaires, let's see, right?
So it's been challenging. So when we looked at Forbes, the content and the angle in Vietnam, so what do we do that thing that we are providing meaning to the business community? So the three things that we do here. One is the general executive leadership community. We have a brand called we're celebrating top 50 publicly traded companies every year. And that the audience, like the C-level or the director level that wants to be in the C-suite. Those are the readers. We're providing them insights with the industry on real estate, finance, banking, manufacturing, renewable energy, and so forth. It's a bit bigger view. Second group would be Forbes Women, a community where we're celebrating women in leadership. The gender issues in Vietnam at work. What I've learned through Forbes and talking to a lot of companies is not as serious as in America. We have more women in control in the boardroom. We have more women in executive positions in Vietnam than I ever seen, which is fantastic. Hence, we need to enhance and celebrate that even more with Forbes Women brand. We're telling stories on inspiring women, most powerful women in Vietnam, women in executive positions, successful executive positions who are not inheriting wealth from family. So there's a lot of self-made women executives in Vietnam as well. Now the third bucket is the Forbes Under 30. So I've changed the brand slightly. It's not called Forbes 30 Under 30 anymore, because we want to find really good talent, really good people we want to celebrate, whether we can meet the number 30 or not. So we just do Forbes Under 30. If next year we do 15 people, we do 15 people. 17 people, we do 17 people.
So the three pillars, we have business leaders in general, we have women, and we have the under 30, kind of the new spirits and innovation driving Vietnam that happen to be younger.
Yes.
Which leads me to my next question, which is Forbes's not just the content, but the business itself. There's a lot of chatter just globally about the sustainability of media companies. We're generally speaking in the same business. And, I think it is not an easy business, but if you find certain niches, you can most certainly thrive. I'd love to learn from your perspective, Forbes being, driven by this print kind of magazine identity, moving into digital. You guys are undergoing that transformation at the moment. How do you guys make sure you're staying top of the game and providing products to your readers, but also your clients on the B2B side that, hey, let's keep content is one thing, but the formats that we deliver in them, that's another. I'd love to touch upon what you guys are doing aside from just the content pillars to drive that narrative.
Before I came in here, and as I enter this industry, a lot of people say, "Why are you going to media? There's no money in there." And you're
Who are saying that?
many executives in the business community. They run real estate business, they run automotive industry, and then so forth. They've seen it. They've seen the business model, and especially in Vietnam, it's challenging. Forbes, everybody, most people I met, and they probably know of us as a Forbes magazine. And that's true because Forbes started out as a magazine, but Forbes today, globally, is a media business. Media means we do many different things. We do conferences, we do video, we do social, we do a lot of different things. So in Vietnam, we are, when I took over, that's the mindset I'm trying to change. So I'm trying to steer people towards. Content is content. Content would be displayed and distributed and shared across multi-channel, multi-platforms. In our business, we have three pillars. One, which is the brand statement, which is the magazine. Many people want to be on the cover or featured. Forbes operates very independently, and when we put somebody in the cover, on the cover or in the magazine, we've done a lot of research and thorough analysis. But that magazine is a print copy and they circulate around, but it's not going to have much traction in terms of reaching millions and millions of people. And also, it's probably not really friendly because we print it on the paper. Not really sustainable for the future. But that's still a brand statement and is strong for us. We print less, we're shifting focus on something else. So there's Forbes magazine. Second part would be the conferences. So we've drawn these topics from the magazine, which is really interesting or exciting or relevant to the business community, and we host conferences around that. That's where we bring the community together. From the magazine, I did an interview with you, for example, but that only stays in the fixed format in the print copy. But if I bring how to a conference, then the audience, the readers, the business community will have a chance to have a conversation with him about certain points that they read in the magazine. That would be more
It's multiple
interesting.
points of engagement rather than just one format
Correct.
through the magazine.
So that the conferences part. And then the third part would be digital. Digital video, social, web. That's what we are shifting towards and we're building because that's what we think it has better reach and more, that's where the world is reaching into. That's where we are.
You took over the Forbes business, grew it to where it is today, but you had no experience necessarily in the main business, which is content and media. You had to learn on the go. Yes, you had a product background. You can do development and product development. That's super great assets to have as a skill set. What were some of the challenges you faced aside from just the knowledge base of the industry? Like, I'll give you a little bit of my story, for instance. Yes, I could write. Yes, I could, talk to people, but I wasn't necessarily a professional, running events, let's say, right? And I had to learn on the go. What were some of your challenges when it came to running this business? If you're able to share, what those were.
And you're right, I don't have a background in media, but I'm always having a business mindset. So I like reading about different industry, understanding certain decisions being made, and what impact would that do to the business in the future. So in general, I like that. So coming into media and more specifically in the business environment, it doesn't take long to understand that landscape. But there are certainly a lot of challenges in many places. I understand that, and I brought in a team that has a lot more experience than me in in the media space, and they helped me to correct the course that I'm going. And I focus more on the technology side, digital transformation, and content strategy. I work with my editor in chief on the content, and we agreed to work some angle together. But the challenges, there are quite a few, but let's share a few things that I think is resonating, learning from, and entering this market. Forbes is a company about journalism, quality journalism, unbiased views, in-depth analysis, exclusive stories on interviews. We're not a news organization. We don't send our journalists out to do a bit about, today the market is this, tomorrow is that. We do analysis. That's what we sell to the business community. Quality journalism, independent from the commercial side. When I enter this as a business owner, I do want the business to grow and monetize from it. But the challenge is, how Forbes survived for more than 100 years today is editorial and commercial independence. So we have no say in what from a commercial point of view, we have no say in what the editorial department is doing. So the editorial department has the, let's say, final say on the cover, the stories, and everything. And then commercial team is very much stay away. If the editorial side talks to a company, and the commercial team should not be in conversation with. They can only allow to be approached after, but not during the interview or the prospecting process. So that's been challenging because, that's restricting my ability to grow as a business. But at the end, I think that is the right way to grow the business sustainably, because people read Forbes. That is unbiased views. That is not influence. If you hear in the market, anybody will say that I bought myself a place in the cover or a story in the magazine, that's not true. And if it did happen, I would want to be the first to know. But we run a very tight ship, and I trust my editor in chief has managed with high integrity, and everything we put in the magazine is they're worth they are they should be in there. So the biggest challenge. The second part would be, I'm big into education, sharing experience. It's very difficult to bring good quality content when we do interviews with businesses in Vietnam. So the magazine, the content of Forbes, very much 40, 50% international content, and the rest 50, 60% are local stories. The challenging part for us is to bring in various different perspective from local businesses. For example, we able to see more Western companies share their failures, and then they succeed. Because that, we've seen that's the natural evolutions of anything. You have to fall 10 times to be or 100 times to be able to win something. But in Vietnam, that's the challenging part.
To talk about failures. It's all
We
about
nobody
talking
talks about
success.
it.
Really?
They talk about success. They're celebrating a lot of that, but they wouldn't share the lesson learned. Lessons learned with others has been challenging for us. So the reason why we still keep the international content is from innovation practices to the failure stories.
Let's talk about the prospects heading into next year. Going, I think the last 2 years, you started the business during a very challenging time. Every year has its own set of challenges, of course. But what can you share with the audience today that they can look forward to in terms of a new or improved experience of reading Forbes? May it be digital, may it be more events. What can you share today that they can look forward to?
When I took over at a very unfortunate time, we launched the magazine in April of last year. And then in May and June, Vietnam started hitting its really big wave and it shut down. It's been challenging for us, and we had to force ourselves to think in a creative way. We tried different products here and there, but this year is a full year that we actually tried out many different things. We had different products, different events, different concepts. And this year's validated a lot of things for us to say what works and what doesn't work. So heading into 2023, we are still keeping the magazine. And that's our brand. We're still moving towards the depth of conferences. We're trying to figure out what topics, what themes that resonate and valuable and helpful to the business community, to the women community, to the Forbes under 30 community, to the young audience. And we will have more depth in that space in terms of events. The biggest bucket for us to bet on is Digital. Digital, more products in terms of video. I have a show just like this. It's called Forbes CEO Talks, where we do one-on-one executive interviews. And we have different formats to launch. We will launch different video products for the younger generation, for the Forbes women. We also try to focus more on selling content than ads driven. The whole media space in Vietnam, you start seeing in the more modern society, companies focusing less on generating revenue from ads. They are setting up paywalls, right? Means that they're selling content. So think of Netflix and HBO, they're selling content.
Subscriptions,
They're
right?
not selling you advertising anymore. That path, I believe that is a more sustainable path for media in general. In Vietnam, we start seeing Đức Việt Media, they do a VION, which is a subscription model. You pay for content, but not paying for, not producing a show and asking advertisers to come in and getting revenue from it. The intention is to have premium access to certain analysis and interviews from Forbes content. We want to experiment that. Certainly, there's still free content for people to read. Whereas when we produce in-depth content, we want to experiment with subscription model. I do believe that is a win-win for both parties, for the business itself and for the readers themselves. They want to have good content, but no one's want to be interrupted with advertising. And I don't want to rely on clients out there to give us money from marketing and PR perspective. It's nice to have, but it's not sustainable as a business for me to be in. So that's the model that I'm trying to experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
So today we've discussed some of the challenges and opportunities that you face as a leader within Forbes. You kind of shared a little bit about what you did in the US as well. I want to backtrack a little bit to the start of when you arrived in Vietnam. You talked about enterprise, you talked about Forbes, but there's a bit of a gap there. There's a few years where you, or not a few, maybe just a couple of years where you did other things. And you mentioned in Vietnam, people like to talk about successes, but not necessarily about mistakes and things that you learned. As an entrepreneur, I'm sure you faced a few mistakes of your own.
Yeah.
Like for instance, we talked offline just before this. You used to have a craft beer business, just to switch gears a little bit. I'd love to hear and see if you can share to our audience today some of your own mistakes that you did. Could be within Forbes, you mentioned a couple already, but also within outside of Forbes, your challenges operating an actual business here
Right.
in Vietnam as well. Maybe you can share about that.
So when I came back, that I started an enterprise. I was in logistics industry for a bit. Logistics is a huge industry in Vietnam, and it's really, really challenging. We don't have a lot of innovation in that space. Foreign companies coming in with their system and processes, and they're doing great. For $100 you spend on logistics industry, $85 belongs to foreign investors and $15 to the local companies. We are very low in the value chain, and this is an exciting space. I didn't have enough time to play with it. Because I was running that and also enterprise at the same time. Enterprise, there's a lot of problems and challenges in terms of human resources and dealing with people. But during that time, I also invested in a space that my personal interest is craft. So craft beer, a friend of mine, we've known for each other for 16 years, he started a brewery here. And I thought, okay, it was nice to invest in that space. As I enter the space of craft beer business, learning a lot from it, it's quite challenging. And the biggest lesson learned from it is craft beer or novelty products, let's say single malt whiskey. Craft beer and single malt whiskey are similar in certain sense that it takes a significant resources to educate the consumer. So we don't have that big market here. From even brewing resources, we don't have people who know craft beer enough to brew quality products because it's coming from Europe and America. There's no amount of money enough to educate people here when you're such a small player. It needs to take an entire industry, a whole association, alliance of businesses come together to educate people on craft, on quality. Craft is about craftsmanship and quality of these products, whereas lager, other brands are less focusing on the taste and the depth of it, but more on A relaxing, quick experience, and Vietnam is a big beer drinking culture. You don't see a person sipping a beer. They're just taking 100% of it at the
Yeah.
time.
So it sounds like, okay, so through that experience, education sounds like it was a big thing, sharing to the consumers about new trends, new innovations. Now you're kind of sitting on the other side at Forbes and media. You're helping to educate the audience now through content and media. It's quite the change there.
If I had Forbes before, that would be
Yeah. No, that's
different.
great. Gung, we're nearing the end of our podcast. I always like to ask a couple questions. The first is, through this show, Vietnam Innovators, we've profiled a number of folks from startups to corporations, helping to innovate within their space. With your kind of network, we overlap a little bit, but you kind of touch a different community as well at Forbes. Who do you think would be a great addition to have on the show that you think our younger audience might be interested in hearing from? It could be another business executive, it could be a startup, maybe they're starting their own craft brewery to, leading a big corporation. Who do you think, not particular name perhaps, but a general industry that you think our young audience would benefit from hearing from?
There are, I guess, because Forbes, I'm exposed to more bigger MNCs, and I see a lot of different challenges. I am big into two industries. One is education. I like to share experience and knowledge. I like to teach. I used to teach in the States at MBA level. And the second part would be the path forward, which is sustainability, a more greener economy, a greener planet. I would say you can only educate that from an early days with younger generation to be very well aware of the world is warming up and the resources is drying up. So COP26, Prime Minister Pham Minh Chinh pledged to commit to net zero carbon emission by 2050. Following that, we've seen a lot of MNCs coming into Vietnam, committed to the same or even if not better, by 2030, carbon neutral. So there are a lot of companies that I think if you can bring these people in to talk about what they're doing, just small steps in the right direction, I think that would be insightful, that would be inspiring, that would be motivating for the younger generation to support that cause. And the other thing is one startup that I was participating in, the Google startup mentorship with the young generation was a company focusing on MaaS, which is it's called Mobility as a Service. Mobility as a Service is encouraging people to reduce ownership of vehicles, but in a sharing economy. And I think if you look at the younger generation today, to show off wealth is not about owning a nice vehicles or big homes, but it's about experience. So tapping into that, I think any company, a startup that addressing reducing people moving around as much in these in cars and bikes independently, that will reduce the pollution and create a greener Ho Chi Minh City for all. So
Okay, great. Yeah, net zero, COP26, COP27, it's
it's
happening
coming up.
this year as well. Thank you, Gung, for sharing your insights. One last question. We're talking offline just now that you grew this Forbes business and the team from just you and a couple founding folks to what it is now, almost 50 full-time staff. What other areas of the team are you looking to hire for in the coming year? I think a lot of our audience might be interested for those looking to get into media.
We're looking for open-minded, creative young people to join our digital team, digital focused on video products, social media products, online content. It could be commercial or it could be editorial. So that space that we're growing strong next year. And we love to find good people, motivated, exciting people join us and celebrating the younger generation of Vietnam.
Okay. Well, you heard it from Gung himself, CEO of Forbes Vietnam. You can find him on Instagram, LinkedIn, wherever he's online, and of course, pick up a Forbes magazine wherever you see it. Thank you so much for joining the show, Gung. It's been a pleasure to learn from you and hear about your insights. And wish the best of luck, of course, to the
Thank you
Forbes
very
Vietnam
much.
team.
Thank you.
Yes. And we'll see you guys next time. With a comprehensive healthcare ecosystem, GeoHealth integrates technology to optimize the examination experience for their customers.
Geobe Smart Clinic provides a multi-specialty clinic experience with a team of elite doctors and cutting-edge technology. And with their recent Series B investment of up to $20 million US dollars, GeoHealth is coming closer to expanding their smart clinic system nationwide.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.